Welcome back, WNST and Baltimore Positive. We're usually Towson or Baltimore.
Or
Don Moeller. Yeah, we're in the capital of the state of Maryland. We're in Annapolis today at the Maryland House. We're down here doing some interesting stuff because we have not had a lot of hospital representatives on. And Don, this is a place where everyone comes together once a year and discusses things and trying to get things done in the state. I guess on behalf of people like my wife, who is a cancer patient in Hopkins, your grandson, none of us want to spend time in hospitals, but we inevitably do, and the government's involved in that. And today's the day we're going to learn some things. We have with us today Susan Lawrence, Senior Government Affairs at UMB, and I'm going to learn the difference between UMB and UMMS. Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning.
I wish
Hi,
we had more coffee
you.
From Rofo here today. We got water, but that's okay. I'm caffeinated. Nicole Stallings is also here. She's a Senior Vice President of Government Affairs and Policy for the Maryland Hospital Association. Tell me what the Maryland Hospital Association does, first thing. So you're the ones that put this on today.
We are, and good morning. We are the trade association for Maryland 61 hospitals and health systems. We are their primary advocate here in Annapolis and D.C., and today we're excited because we're talking about the things that are before us during the legislative session.
61 hospitals
yes.
in the state. Is that down from a number, or is that up to a number? Were there more hospitals at one point?
We have had some consolidations and some conversions to what we call freestanding medical facilities over time, but one thing that has remain consistent is all of our hospitals are nonprofit.
Well, the one thing I learned last year is that hospitals employ so many people, right? And you're with the UMMS, but UMB, Susan. I want to make sure we get this straight because I'm a little confused. But
University of Maryland, Baltimore. We represent the 7 professional graduate schools, one of which being the School of Medicine. So we train the doctors so that practicing and providing services at UMS. Yes.
Nice. All right.
Let's start there. I think it's a great jumping off point because you talk about training the doctors, training the personnel. One of the things that I've heard, and both of you can react to this from folks in the hospital industry, in the medical industry, is that it's being increasingly important that we focus on an issue of workforce and being able to attract a competent workforce to come to Maryland.
Let me hear that with teachers, too.
Yeah, with all these helping professions. So I start with, is that accurate? Is workforce a vital component of what you all are focusing on each and every day?
So every year, the Hospital Association surveys our CEOs, and we ask them what the top challenge is. And this year, for the very first time, workforce was number one. It's always been towards the top of the list. Workforce was first, and when we dug in a little deeper, specifically, it was the ability to recruit and retain physicians. So top priority for Maryland's hospitals, natural partnership then for the Hospital Association and the University of Maryland Baltimore, because as Susan said, they're the ones doing the training, and I'll let you speak to your work.
Right. So it was great that we could partner on this. We've been working through UMB and the legislature over many, many decades on training and physicians, and particularly getting providers in rural areas, underserved areas, healthcare shortage areas. And it's been cyclical over the last 10, 15 years. But as you'll see in some numbers, the American Medical Colleges Association has reported we're going to have a shortage of docs by the year 2032 of over 100,000, and half of those are in primary care.
But what was that year again? By what year?
32.
That's 2032.
Not that far off.
No. We're 12 years away. We're going to be 100,000 doctors short.
So do we not have enough doctors going into the college and university system to train to be doctors? Not enough children grow up wanting to be doctors and becoming doctors? It's hard to be a doctor.
It is hard to be doctors. I think one of the greatest challenges is debt. They know what the debt's going to be when they get out. Our numbers for 2019 for our medical students, the debt was pushing over $185,000.
Not unlike anyone else. Student debt is everyone's issue, right? It's
right.
going to be a big issue this year
in
running for president.
Oh, well.
Well, will
be.
I mean, it's going to be
yes,
something we're
absolutely.
Going to talk about.
Yep.
You know, it's
absolutely.
Be something people are going to vote
absolutely.
On. Doctors, though, you don't think about it like that.
Right.
I guess, I mean, my wife was in the emergency room 4 days ago, and you show up and you think that person's probably not from Baltimore, and they usually aren't, or not from Maryland. But recruiting, lifestyle for doctors, what's the most important? What's a doctor looking for? I've spent all this time. I've got all this debt. I can work anywhere maybe in the world. What attracts a doctor to Maryland or to one of our hospitals?
So I think, and I do want to pick up a bit more on that debt, because it also is influencing what the specialty is that the physician's doing. And Susan noted that that focus really around shortages is around primary care. So we need to make sure that we are making options available around loan repayment for these physicians so that they want to do the right thing. They want to work in these underserved areas. They've got loan repayment options available to them. The good news is we do have a program here in the state. We've had it for several years. There's been some funding reductions over time, but it does exactly what we're talking about. It says, hey, if you want to raise your hand, practice in these underserved areas in Baltimore City, in Western Maryland, on the Eastern Shore, and others in primary care, broadly defined, psychiatrists, obstetrics, pediatrics, family docs, you name it, we're going to help you. And we've got loan funding repayment available for you. So that's where we're working this year with the legislature to try to make sure that that program is as robust as it can be, both from funding and some streamlining. It's a big initiative, and we're really excited about it.
Take folks, I think that's an important issue. And again, for those of you listening and not watching on Facebook, we're with Susan Lawrence and Nicole Stallings. We're talking health care in the state of Maryland and its current situation. Go back again to the loan situation that you're trying to address and to make available to help with the workforce issue. Take folks behind the curtain who may be listening or watching. What does that mean in the legislature, first of all? How do you go about, first of all, what kind of reaction are you getting in your initial discussions with legislators in terms of this being a priority, and how do you make sure this happens?
So everyone's very supportive of this program, knowing that the tool is already in the toolbox. It's just that this tool, over the last probably 11, 12 years, has had a certain level of funding, and it has decreased, unfortunately, over the last few years. It's been kind of flat level funded at $400,000. We need to ramp that back up. The applicants over the last 2 years for 19 and fiscal year 20 has reached over 175 applicants. So there's a need. People know it's there. They want to access it. Unfortunately, with that level of funding, and maybe some other administrative denial programming and eligibility requirements, 27 awards were able to be given over the last 2 years.
Out of how many applicants?
175.
Right, right.
And the law states each applicant can receive up to $50,000 a year at a cap of $200,000 for 4 years. So that's quite a dent in your debt if you're able to access that. With this level of funding we currently are operating under, there's never been an award over the last 2 years over the amount of $22,000. So it has to be worth a while to apply. You have to want to dedicate your time to serve in that area for 2 years after, and then hopefully retention rate nationally says 83% of people that do practice in rural areas will stay, but we've got to get you there first. And that little bit of a dent is probably not going to bring you to the areas that we need you to serve in and keep you. We've got to get the money back up. We've got to get more applicants, get more awards made.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. So what does that number look like? I mean, I think folks that have been down in Annapolis know you have a number that you'd like to get, you've got another number, and then you have a disappointing number. So to truly make a difference, if folks out there, I mean, one of the things, if folks are listening and they think this is an important issue, and we'll talk about the underserved areas, but when folks are listening and they want to call their legislator and say, look, this really does matter, it's touched my family, what kind of funding are we looking for this year?
So we would like upwards of $1 million for this funding.
Doubling, basically.
Our minimum was to bring it up to the funding levels in the past. And one thing we haven't mentioned is we leave federal matching funds on the table when we don't maximize the funding at the state level. You never want to do that. And we want to make sure that we are providing a path to continue to grow this program over time. So we know we have a lot of competing factors for limited budget dollars. We think, and as Susan said, we're getting the support that we need because everyone understands how important it is to have physicians in these communities. We do not want to turn away physicians, physician assistants who are ready to serve.
But break that down for us. I mean, Nestor and I are obviously Baltimore guys.
Yep.
We're in the Baltimore region. I'll come back to that issue because I hear that's we're not immune from the recruitment and the workforce issue. But I'm driving in my car now, and I'm heading back to Western Maryland or the Eastern Shore. Talk to us about where the underserved areas are in the state of Maryland.
So these are federally designated, but when we do have state-funded programs, it provides flexibility for the state to say we also have needs in certain areas. So when you think of our rural communities, those certainly would account. And even one physician One obstetrician, for example, out in Garrett County could make the world of difference for that community. So every dollar matters. We really want to focus on growing this the most we can. But as you said, this is also a Baltimore City. Right. I think we looked at the numbers. I'm going to ballpark a bit, but for Baltimore City and Baltimore County, we were talking about 65 eligible physicians who said, yes, I want to serve in a clinic, in a hospital, in a health center. And we had to turn away all but one because we didn't have the funding we needed at the state level. So let's an investment.
The funding for the center?
The LARP funding.
Or the funding to help them with their debt.
With their debt.
You're not okay. Competing with other states, with other municipalities. That really is the bigger issue, right?
This is a Maryland opportunity here.
Well, I'm trying to understand. So are these 28, 30-year-old young men or women who've literally been at Duke or Northwestern or Maryland or wherever it would be studying? Now they come out, they have how much debt? What's the profile of this person you recruit? Because you recruit someone to Salisbury and they fall in love with it, they spend their life there, right? And I guess that would be true for any, but nothing more important than a doctor. I live in the city, right? So my wife gets cancer 5 years ago. We go over to Hopkins and she gets the best treatment known to mankind. She's alive. She's had two bone marrow transplants. Can't imagine if we woke up in Oakland, Maryland, what that would have looked like, whether we would have wound up in Pittsburgh or in West Virginia or in Baltimore or in New York. We had opportunities to go to Mayo Clinic in Minnesota or other places to get treatment. We felt very blessed that I was 1.6 miles away from Johns Hopkins for the 155 nights that she fought. So, but I didn't. You come into it, and it's the last place you expect to be is in a hospital, and you don't think, where did my doctor come from? He was from Philadelphia. He's a wonderful man. He just left the state to go back to run his facility up in Pennsylvania where he was from. But I would think, recruiting to Maryland, there are all of the other issues that we talk to colleges about, trying to recruit your son or daughter to a Baltimore school. But recruiting a doctor after its own, what is the profile of that person? What's a typical person that we're talking about helping here?
So when you graduate from medical school, you have to go into residency training after that. That is the point where we need to get those medical students to commit to us. Because you can go to residency training anywhere. We may lose you to another state, another incentive program somewhere else.
This is your first opportunity to hook them in.
Yes. Okay. And then how do we get you back? Unfortunately, in the LARP program, for the piece of the funding that is stateside funding, that is the only piece a resident in their third year is eligible to apply for. It's a little late. And that's why it's really hard to pinpoint who those people are that are taking advantage of this. What we do know is the ones that have taken advantage of it. We have a doctor we've located on the Eastern Shore. She did go to residency in Pennsylvania and wanted to come home to her home county in Dorchester to practice, which she is practicing now at family medicine. But therein lies the problem. You want to come back and practice family medicine, which we all need primary care, but the pay is a lot less than anywhere else for in a specialty. So that's another problem. So you're going to graduate with $185,000 debt. You're going to start right off every
that's
month.
That's average, 185s?
Correct.
Okay.
You're going to come right out of school looking at a house payment on top of all of your other ways of living. So how are you going to go live on the Eastern Shore and then have transportation and travel? There's all these layers that add up. So that's why if we can get the numbers up and we can get people's debt paid off for them, it's more attractive for them. And they're able to stay in a rural area. Well, and their spouses and their families are attracted to it as well.
And they start their life there. Once they start their life there.
Yes, they plant their roots there. Yes, and become part of the community.
One of the things that I've heard periodically is that the economics of being a doctor has changed over the last 30, 40, 50
years.
Well,
we think the insurance alone, right?
That
literally.
And actually the income expectations, I guess, is the way to say it. That, you know, we still have, and I think you alluded to earlier, the family practice folks, we still have the top doc surgeons and the specialists making a lot of money, let's say, having, you know, very, but that if you're one of the other providers, that the same economic potential, you're not doing this as well as you did 30, 40 years ago compared to other professions. Is that accurate?
It is. We are seeing that a lot of the students are choosing to go into more specialty areas.
Right. Yes. So the whole idea of family practice really matters. I know we're coming up against the clock. Tell our folks again who are listening, if they care about this issue, Which I can't imagine they don't.
We all want better doctors. Yeah, speaking for someone, you know.
Access.
We want access to health care. What do they need to do to help you communicate with legislators? What can the person in their car right now do to make a difference on this issue?
You can talk to your local legislator, and it is access. An investment in loan repayment is an investment in access in your local communities. We want to attract and keep physicians in Maryland. There's ways we can do it. Support loan repayment.
Good enough.
I think we learned a lot. Last 15 minutes, good stuff.
We're in Annapolis. We're usually in Baltimore or Catonsville or Towson or Eastside, but we're down in Annapolis talking about medical issues and hospital issues. Really appreciate Nicole Stallings coming by from the Maryland Hospital Association as well as Susan Lawrence and making short notice. Appreciate you guys. I learned stuff. That's why we do Baltimore Positive.
Good luck.
Fabulous. You know where to reach us.
There we go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Nestor.
Thank
He's
you.
Dom. We're going to come back for more Baltimore Positive down in Annapolis. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.